Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are back tonight again with the second part of our Kosher Food and Wine Experience 2012. We will start by talking live with Aaron Ritter, the president and founder of the Kosher Wine Society. Good evening, Aaron.
Good evening, Chaim. How are you today?
All right. So this has been a very busy week for wine lovers. Between Sunday evening at the City Winery, where 14 new wines were introduced, a sneak preview to what was going to be introduced the next day at the Kosher Food and Wine Experience, and, of course, the Kosher Food and Wine Experience itself on Monday. What is your take on the new wines? What were some of your favorites? How would you pair it with some of the food that was at the show, the restaurants, and so on? Tell us a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, there was just such a great selection of wines both nights, Sunday night and Monday night. But at the show, it was so exciting to enjoy the wines with all the different types of foods that were available from all the restaurants. It was a unique event, and some of my highlights and some of the wines that I really enjoyed. And I'll go by country because it's sometimes a little bit easier to do. Spain, we have the Capsanas wines, the Flora de Flor, and the Flora. The Capsanas wines are just a fantastic addition.
Flora de Primavera.
Yes, both of those are fantastic. We were able to taste the 2000. You were able to taste three vintages of the Capsanas Primavera, and the Flora de Flora, just the 2009 was available. And also from the LV wines, there were quite a few wines at the show and at the event on Sunday night, so I had a chance to taste quite a few of those. His wines are very elegant, very fruit-forward type of wines, and Dr. Moses does a great job with his wines, and they're very, very nice. From Israel, some of the highlights were the Kestel Winery. The rosé was just totally delicious, totally floral, very, very unique wine. And it was Kestel does a great job with all of their wines, the Petit Kestel, the Grand Vin Kestel, the rosé, and they just do such a beautiful job with their wines, and it's really a testament to their winemaking ability.
Absolutely, and as a matter of fact, when I was speaking to Jeff Morgan, he said that one of his inspirations for starting a kosher wine line was specifically the Kestel Winery. He wanted to model himself after them. They happened to be in California, and he says after speaking to them, he understood what it takes to make a really good wine, although I understand that he had been making very good wines for quite a while, even before he went kosher.
Yes. Yeah, Jeff's another one from California. The Covenant Wine Series is fantastic. It's just a beautifully, beautifully made wine, and he also came out with the rosé, the Covenant.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
right.
You know, Jeff's wines are great, and he does a phenomenal job with the wines. And back to Israel for a moment, and then we'll get back to some other
mm-hmm.
areas. The Tulip Winery, their Cabernet, fantastic. From the Flam Winery, the Classico. The Shiloh Winery also had some very beautiful wines. And, you know, from California, the wines that are, you know, the Baron Herzogs from California are always, always a good wine. Always good value, good quality type of wine. Baron Herzog, even just the regular wines are phenomenal. But the Generation 8 and the Clone, you know, the Clone, they have just some very unique wines at the high level type, and their reserve wines are great, and it's always
yes,
great seeing their
Generation
winemaker. Generation
8 has not been produced in over 5 years.
Yeah, every year, depending on the year, they make that wine, and depending on the grapes,
the quality
and
of the
worthy
grapes,
enough,
right.
You know, they'll make a specific type of wine. And just their basic wines, though, are great on the Baron Herzog side and their reserves. And then, you know, we had a chance to taste these Pacifica wines, which was, a new thing for us kosher wine
mm-hmm.
consumers in the fact
right.
that it was probably one of only a few wines made in well, he's from
Oregon.
New Zealand, and but one of the only few wines that are made in kosher Oregon wines. So it was truly mm-hmm. a unique wine, the Pacifica, and obviously the winemaker is the same winemaker that makes his wines in New Zealand. So that's always they're always a fun bunch of wines.
Yes.
He was explaining how he makes them. He doesn't really use any oak barrels, which is kind of unique. He really just uses mm-hmm. steel tank, and he leaves it, in steel tank to make his wines. It's a unique way of making it, and they happen to be very, very delicious type of wines, easy drinking.
Absolutely, especially that Meritage.
Yes, delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And, some of the highlights on the food side, I thought ETC Steakhouse did a fantastic job. Seth Warshaw is the owner of ETC, and he was there, dishing out delicious, yummy oxtail. It was just fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one that was, Pomegranate always has a nice spread of food. Obviously, their food is fantastic. And the other one that was the Gotchulent guys, they have some,
mm-hmm.
some great food, and they do some good catering and very unique type of stuff.
Under the name Gemstone.
Gemstone Catering. Yep, exactly. So it was a fun night of drinking and seeing a lot of people that I know that through the Kosher Wine Society, through our members, just walking through there is always a pleasure, seeing a ton of people that I know and that are kosher wine consumers. So it's a fun night and always an experience.
Now, you mentioned Israel, you mentioned New Zealand, you mentioned the United States, you mentioned Spain. What about some of the other countries? What about some of the French wines?
Yeah, French wines... I only had a chance to taste a few of them at the event. More recently, I've tasted a couple of them just on a regular Shabbat, where I had the Punta Canet
mm-hmm.
wines.
Punta Canet.
Yep, delicious, French wine. But I always find French wines, you have to have it with food. Otherwise, it really is hard to drink sometimes.
Absolutely.
And, you smell a French wine, it always has that barnyard smell. It always has that... that French wine type of smell. It's usually way more elegant type of wines, not as much, fruit forward. But for me personally, there are two choices. Either I like an aged French wine, or I really enjoy that California, fruity Cabernet. That's my type of wine. So those are, unfortunately, they contradict each other. But I happen to like both those.
Okay. Did you see any Italian selections?
Their Italian selections. I didn't have a chance to taste them, but obviously the Bartonura always is a go-to. Obviously the blue bottle, everyone loves that bottle. But I like the Rashi, some of the Rashi Barolos, and a little bit. They're more elegant wines. You think with the name that it's not as supreme type of wines, but the Bartonura they do make some good wines that are very, very delicious wines and good wines and the price happens to be right for a lot of them.
If you were to plan, let's say you're planning in a fleishig meal with friends, okay? What
yep.
type of food would you prepare based on what you saw at the show, and what type of wine would you pair it with?
Great question. I love those standing rib roasts. That's my type of food, and
mm-hmm.
steak and meat and heavy dishes are always delicious.
Right.
And I love the Shiloh. That Shiloh Cabernet was fantastic. Also the Tulip. Those two wines really stuck out for me this time around. And Psagot had some very nice wines. Hundreds of wines there.
When Psagot first came out in the States, their Cabernet, I found that one a little bit better than the new Cabernet that they have now. I was a bit disappointed in this one. I had much higher expectations based on the first offering.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's so great about wine is that everybody, it's their own unique journey. And, you know, what you like is different. So it's a great thing because there's so many different choices out there and so many different types of wines. And it's, I'm very happy to say that, you know, these type of events and other events like the City Winery event coming up on March 11th. These are all great events to taste a lot of different wines. And, you know, what's great about the March 11th event also is you get to taste wines from a lot of different other wineries and other winemakers, and it's a unique event as well.
Okay, and that just about wraps it up as we are about to start with our pre-taped part. Thank you very, very much. As usual, we love talking to you, and we'll have to do this again soon.
Sounds good. Thank you, Chaim.
Thank you, and good night.
Good night.
And now we will turn to the pre-taped interviews, and the next one coming up is going to be Pierre Miodovnik. He's a consultant to the French wine industry, specifically to Baron Edmond de Rothschild. He has his own winery in Israel, Domaine Netofa, and he's also a consultant to the Royal Wine Corporation.
Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, is Pierre Miodovnik, a consultant to most of the French wine industry. He's gone around over the years to various of the most famous winemakers in France, like Chateau Pontet Canet, Chateau de Barsac, and quite a few others, including Baron Rothschild, where he's currently with at the show. And it's an honor to have you here, sir. And we'd like to ask you, how did you come to this? How does a Kotzker Bocher become a winemaker, and a famous winemaker at that?
Simply my family, before the Second War, come to live in south of France. And after the Second War, they come back also to the south of France, where I was born. And south of France is the land of the wine. So I fell in the wine barrel when I was
you were still a kid.
And when I went to be a winemaker, I think if there is so much good non-kosher wine, maybe we can do them kosher also. And we try. We begin in 86 with Baron Edmond de Rothschild, and straight away after with the partnership with Royal Wine, and we develop our brand in 93. We introduce the first grow kosher wine. It was Chateau Giscourt, and a few years after we find in Chateau Léoville Poitferré, Chateau Pontet Canet, in Chateau Malartic La Gravière, and we winify also in Spain, in Portugal. We winify the first port, kosher port, by Taylor Flatgate under the name Cordovero. And since 3 years, I make my aliyah in Israel, where I own a winery, and we produce wine under the name Domaine Netofa. And now this wine are also in port by Royal Wine Corp on the U.S. market.
Now, I remember when I first met you here a couple of years ago, you also had, aside from the famous red wine chateaus, you also had some famous hotels like Chateau Giraud and some others. I do not see them this year.
Yes, in the show we have Chateau Piada 2006, a very nice cru bourgeois in Barsac-Sauternes, and I propose to all wine lovers to taste it because it's now on the top of its quality. You have very citrus and pamplemousse, I don't know in English on the term. And it's a very great dessert wine. I just tasted before 10 minutes. I was very, very impressed.
When I first tasted Chateau Piada, I was very impressed until I tasted Chateau Giraud. How does the new Piada compare to Chateau Giraud?
Chateau Giraud is a Grand Cru, but unfortunately we finish it. So we can compare. If you want a good, very good dessert wine, you have Chateau Piada. If you want less expensive dessert wine, you have also good Vouvray Clos de Nuit, who is made with the Chenin in the Loire Valley.
Now, when you decided to make all these great wines in a kosher format, Wasn't it a bit adventurous to go to all these famous chateaus and try to convince them? How did you manage to sell them on the idea? They were doing quite well without bothering about kosher. Why all of a sudden should they, you know?
Yes, of course, it was very, very hard. But with the help of Hashem and with the help of Baron Edmond de Rothschild, you know, in this big chateau, everybody is a friend. So when we come, we have an idea to make in Chateau Giscourt called Edmond Rothschild. I have people who want to make Giscourt kosher. I know you make kosher. How is it? He said, it's good. Very well. Okay, we try. When we go to Léoville-Poirferré and to Ponte Cane or Malatic-la-Graven or Royaumont in Pomerol, you know, they ask, our quality of wine opened all the doors for us.
Okay, my next question is, I understand it opened all the doors, but for example, a place like Chateau Ponte Cane, which at one point was almost completely broke, had almost disappeared from the winemaking map. It was bought out by a Canadian family. They brought it back. So in their case, unless they were extremely friendly or with the Rothschilds, or unless they explicitly trusted anything the Rothschilds would have said, they would have had a problem going to kosher when they're just trying to rebuild.
It's an amazing thing, because this kind of chateau doesn't need to make kosher to sell the
exactly.
Wine. All the wine is sold, you know, in primer in a few days in April every year. They don't need to make kosher. I don't know why. Every time we are going to big chateau and explain that maybe we will make a little part of the production kosher. They were very interesting. I don't know why. It's maybe because it's a niche market for them. Maybe kosher has a good name, you know, in the marketing. I don't understand really what the reason.
Obviously, Hashem must have thought it was a very good idea. It definitely shows his hand is on your enterprise. Tell me a little bit about Domaine Netufa.
So I plant in Israel wines, and when I went to plant wine in Israel, first of all, like in France, I saw what is the climate, what is the soil, what is the terroir, and I knew that in Israel you have almost only Merlot, Cabernet, boutique winery. So first of all, they don't need me to make another Merlot and Cabernet. And I really think that in Israel, our grapes that we plant, like Syrah, Mourvèdre, Touriga National, Trempanillo, Chenin Blanc for the white, are very what this terroir needs. And we saw, we are now in with our third vintage. We had a big success. You have here before you La Tournée Tofa 2009. It's the first release of this wine. We received 89 from Parker. And believe me, it's not a wine in the Parker style. It's a wine in the French style. And so it's our goal to make all the world style wine in the Eretz Israel.
What are your plans for the future, both with Domaine Netufa and with some of the companies that you consult for? Okay, what new things is Domaine Netufa going to be coming out with?
So, Domaine Netufa for Royal Wine Corp is a part of his Israeli wine importation. They like this wine because we are different than the other wine, and we have a very good return for the customer in the USA. And but I'm sure that we will continue to develop also in all Europe new great wine, and we have some project for the next vintage, but it will be a surprise for everybody.
Okay, that's as far as Domaine Netufa. What about the French wines? Anything new coming? Anything exciting?
you know, the economic crisis push us to vinify more Benoni wine, middle wine. So I have with me here, I have a good example, it's Château de Parsac with a Montagne Saint-Emilion, honored by Rothschild family also, with a very good bargain, good price, very nice quality, very easy to drink. And we develop a lot of this kind of wine because it's a lot of demand of this wine. But in parallel, we still have grid wine for grid connoisseur, and so it's very much expensive. But we continue in parallel to do all these kind of wine.
What new things can we expect from places like Ponte Cane?
In the level of Ponte Cane, we will continue with the same label, Ponte Cane, Giscourt, Léoville. This year, in 2011, we vinify the second wine of Léoville. It's called Moulin Riche, with a great Saint-Julien also. And it will be our new wine for the next year.
A new vintage, you mean?
New vintage.
Okay. Thank you very much, Monsieur Miodovnik. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. No, I understood you perfectly, yes. And I am sure my audience will too. After all, I also have an accent. I have a Spanish accent, so don't worry. Between your French and my Spanish, we'll be okay.
Thank you
very much, Monsieur. Up until now, we've been talking to winemakers, wine company executives, and Kerem and Royal Wine Corporation executives. Now we turn our attention to some of the people attending the show, people who come just to taste, to see what is new, to see what is old, which vintages have gotten better. With me, I have Jeff Ingber, who comes all the way from Providence, Rhode Island. He comes to the show every year. He is a trained chef, a graduate of Johnson & Wales University, and he is the volunteer manager of a wine shop inside the day school in Providence, a shop that is used to raise money for the school. Jeff, how are you?
Hi, I'm great. It's a pleasure to be here. It's nice to come home to your roots, to New York, especially to enjoy a fantastic show such as this, to meet experts in what is both a hobby for myself and an opportunity as a volunteer where my children go to school to help raise money for tuition. So what better way as a volunteer to also be able to continue to be a student of fantastic kosher wine that's being produced currently.
Let me ask you, what are some of the wines that you have tasted so far that have become wines that you will surely buy, and why? What would you pair them with?
Today was a fantastic day because I tried a few wines that I have not had before, and I find that them a pretty good value to be sold in Providence, and fantastic opportunity for caterers and other local chefs in Rhode Island to purchase that would accompany some of their fantastic offerings that are on their catering menu. Today, the first one I want to talk about is the Binyamina 2009 Reserve Zinfandel. When you taste this wine, if you are familiar with Israeli wine growers, the first thing that pops for you is the notion of the terroir. Terroir being a French word, which we talk about the earth that the grapes were grown in. And immediately you get this bouquet, this mouth, this feel of copper and iron, this classical Israeli Zinfandel mineral flavor. And as that wine continues to open, you can taste these, what I immediately grasped were mulled blackberries or this flavor of Mexican chocolate. Now, it's kind of ironic, this flavor of mulled blackberries and Mexican chocolate, but today I had the opportunity to take a look at a cookbook called The Kosher Revolution, and that cookbook is written by Gila Hockerman, one of the authors, and as I was thumbing through that cookbook, one of the recipes that popped out immediately to me was a miso-glazed black cod. Now, Zinfandel, traditionally a peppery, berry-type wine, seems like it would be fantastic paired against this two-day miso-marinated black cod. Now, I'm from New England, so black cod is a very difficult fish to come across, typically a Pacific fish. But I am also a fisherman, and when I'm not cooking or volunteering my time for the Providence Hebrew Day School, the ocean is a great place to kind of pull yourself back. You know, the fish don't have, you know, they don't know your name, and the sea is a very big place, so it becomes very quiet. But I am a striped bass fisherman, and I feel like the striped bass would hold up against the black cod, and this miso glaze would be a fantastic way to prepare this striped bass that we catch. And I feel like this Zinfandel, this peppery, berry wine, would be such a tremendous accompaniment to this dish, probably served with an Asian peppery green, baby bok choy. Seems like an excellent accompaniment with this dish. And I'm very excited to get a copy of the book, excuse me, and try this dish opposite that wine.
Any other wines or spirits that you found remarkable?
Well, there were quite a few delicious wines. Having the opportunity to come year after year is always fantastic. But I am also not always a true fan of French wines. I'm very idealistic in the opportunity to purchase Israeli wines, being a Jewish person and having the opportunity to support Israeli wines. But a wine from France, a dessert wine, Chateau Piada, a Sauterne, was so overwhelming to me. Last year, if you had asked me what was the best in show, I would respond to you that with the Epicurean center of the world being in Spain and LV Winery really taking a foothold in that using indigenous grapes, that their EL26 sweet wine, I was talking about that wine for days, weeks, and months on end. Today, I at the very end of the portion of the show today, I tasted this Chateau Piada, and I was truly moved. I thought, this is so complex. This sweet lemongrass, this overwhelming, powerful peach flavor that was coming out of this wine. And again, having found this cookbook today and having met the author, I was thumbing through her book, and I took a look at this macadamia raspberry peach tart. Now, I make a fruit tart, and my customers find it pretty appealing. But I don't use a macadamia flavor in my custard cream as opposed to this recipe. And I felt like this Chateau Piada, the lemongrass and the peaches, could only draw out the flavor of fresh raspberries and fresh macadamia nuts. So again, this is another opportunity for me, always learning, always going out seeking new things to try and prepare these two wines together, whether it be for a personal dinner or whether it be for a catered event for 2,000 people. I'm looking forward to putting these two together.
Okay. What about spirits?
Spirits. So I did have an opportunity to get today to stroll towards the tequila folks. And I'm far more of a wine guy than a spirit guy, but we tasted a few tequilas today, quite a few, as a matter of fact. And one of the things that I enjoyed most, as I thumb through my notes while we're sitting here, was there was a tequila company out here today who had a range of tequilas from a Blanco, a Añejo, a Reposado, and then they called it a Super Añejo. So I thought, what could that be? So I tasted an Añejo that was aged, for well over 5 years. And it tasted like a fine spirit, almost as if it had a buttery and butterscotch and almond flavor, something typically you don't find in tequilas. You know, the American public is afraid of tequila. They see movies. They see some folks doing shots of tequila and falling down on the floor. And once you refine that taste and understand when you learn how to taste wine and you learn how to taste spirits, you can start to identify and isolate these flavors that spirit makers and wine growers are truly intended for you to have. And that was an excellent experience for me today. I learned a little bit about tequila today.
Okay, thank you very much, Jeff. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and we'll have to have you on the radio show again. Thank you, Jeff. And our next guest this evening is Maureen Susanna. She is the owner and creator of Guilty Pleasures, a company that does incredibly delicious and beautifully looking chocolates. Maureen, tell us a little bit about how you got into the business of chocolate, why chocolate, and what is it you're trying to create. As I look at the shapes, as I have tasted them, there is no question you're extremely creative. Now tell us a little bit about how you got into it and what is your goal.
Well, I was actually in real estate for the larger part of my career. About a year ago, I discovered the art of chocolate while attempting to bake with my daughter. I discovered the art of melting chocolate and molding it into shapes and creating unique recipes. And I realized I have a passion for it and a talent for it. And I decided in a little shift in career and to go with something that I'm really passionate about. And it's been an amazing year. I've discovered so much inside of me that I have to offer, unique recipes, a beautiful look, creativity, artistry, and it's been fun. It's been an amazing experience being able to discover something that you truly enjoy doing. And then to see people just enjoying something that you've created is nothing like anything I've ever experienced before, especially not in real estate or any type of sales. And I love it.
I've seen some very imaginative shapes. What inspires you? What is it that gets you to create a shape? And I don't just mean the fruit.
Well,
I mean some of your other shapes.
Well, let's start with the flavors first. I mean, every now and then somebody says to me, ooh, do you do this? Do you have this kind of flavor? And then I think to myself, how can I take that? Oh, for example, somebody told me I love dates, and that's before I created my Be My Date, which is dates and walnuts. So I tried different types of recipes. I tried creating different types of things. I took dates and different nuts and tried working with the dates in different ways until I came to my best recipe. And when I say best recipe, I mean when people have tasted it and told me what they thought. And when somebody says, you know, I'm not feeling enough of the date or enough of the walnut, then I'll try it again until I feel I've come to the right final recipe, the perfected recipe. So some of my recipes I actually stumbled upon by mistake while trying to create something else. You know, you just happen to discover a recipe. Some recipes I have in mind and just, you know, you have something in mind and you try to create it and you work at it and, you know, on trial and error until you get it right, until you feel you have a good gourmet product.
What do you look for in a chocolate when you're trying to find your raw product?
In the chocolate itself? Well, first of all, as far as dark chocolate, I'm a big fan of dark chocolate. And when I say dark chocolate, I mean high percentages of cocoa mass, anywhere from 72 to 86%. And I look for that bold, intense taste that will linger on my palate for a while. On the other hand, what I offer my customers is something a little different because not everybody is such a huge fan of dark chocolate. So in my chocolate creations, I use a much lower percentage of cocoa mass, and while mixing in fresh ingredients, that's something I take a lot of pride in. I use a lot of raw, fresh ingredients. I make everything from scratch. You have fresh strawberries, fresh bananas, fresh dried fruits and nuts. Everything is made from raw ingredients and with a lot of good energy and love put into it and a lot of thought put into it. And I really put a lot of myself in there, a lot of the good that I have in me to create such an amazing product. And I love it. It comes from a really good, positive place.
Looking at some of the shapes you've created, for example, the banana one, it is obvious that you've had some love at some point for architecture. I guess that's what puts you into real estate. Because the shape is a very architectural shape.
Yes, it's the banana. That's what it's called. It's a geodesic shape. Yes, I think it's a unique shape. I like the shape. Many beg to differ. My husband actually does not love that shape, but it's me.
It seems to be done with a mathematical precision, almost.
Well, I think you're making an interesting point.
What are some of the flavors that you use? What are some of the things that you have done different from others, and where do you plan to go next?
Okay, first of all, what I do different from others, as far as the flavors, I'm not afraid to try different things. I use fresh strawberries, fresh bananas. I don't add preservatives so that you can enjoy when you're tasting, and you've tasted it. You've, you know, you taste, You bite into the strawberry ganache and you're feeling fresh strawberries. You're tasting fresh bananas. You can feel the dates. You can feel the nuts. I use pure Colombian supreme coffee in my cappuccino truffles and high-end coffee liquors and all those good high-end products to give you a culinary experience unlike anything you've ever tasted before.
How long since you've started this commercially?
Actually, it's very recent. I mean, I was doing a lot of local work, and I just recently got my hashgacha, and this is actually my very first appearance in front of a big Jewish clientele.
Very nice.
Okay. Okay. Well, you asked me where I plan to go next. Well, basically what you do is, as you've spoken about the shapes, I do a lot of theme pieces, meaning when you order my standard pieces, if you're having an event, I can match a piece to that event. If it's a wedding, I have bride and groom pieces. As you saw on the table, there's a box with an engagement ring in it, pieces for a baby shower, a bris, even sports, jobs,
yes,
all types of...
As a matter of fact, I saw the golf balls.
Yes, the golf and the football for the Giants,
right.
Yes. So if you're having a Super Bowl party or a retirement party, there's job themes and sports themes and games. And I think it's just a very unique thing to have. A lot of people go for the designer cakes. So this is something a little different. I think it's very refreshing.
Okay. Thank you very,
thank
very
you.
Much.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure having you here.
Good luck.
Thank you.
And now we are done for the evening. Thank you very much to all our listeners. Please come back to us next Wednesday at 8 p.m. Standard Time right here at blacktalkradio.com/kosherscene. Thank you very much and good night to one and all.